Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Good day to you one and all. It is I, Justin Hawkins, and this is Justin Hawkins Rides Again, the podcast. Now, today we're tackling a subject that is incredibly serious, and we have to be very careful about how we approach it, really. So we discussed for over an hour the subject of drugs and how intrinsic and prevalent they are in the music trade and around the music trade. And most of it is referring to my own experiences, which I actually found quite cathartic. It was weird to actually be able to open up, and I really appreciate Jenny May, my producer's line of questioning. Didn't feel uncomfortable at all, but maybe that's because I'm so heavily sedated. I don't know. Anyway, I hope you enjoy this episode. Please do enjoy. Good day to you one and all. It is I, Justin Hawkins, and this is Justin Hawkins Rides Again, the podcast? No, Jaws of Victory, Pitfalls of the Music Trade. And today we're talking about, on the back of a phenomenally successful episode about alcohol and alcoholism in the music trade.
Yep.
Today we're tackling the heady subject of, I'm sorry, I amused myself. Drugs.
But dear YouTube, not in a glamorizing
way. Oh, God,
educational.
No. Oh, no. It's more...
Don't take drugs.
I think we're talking about something that's known to be endemic.
Popular.
Popular. Yeah. It's an oft-trod trope.
A pitfall.
It is a pitfall of the music trade. And I think, as such, we're not glamorizing it. We're acknowledging it, that it's something that can derail your career, ruin your life, and make everything more difficult in the long term. But I think what we're going to talk about today is the short-term attraction to it and maybe how people fall into it. I don't know what you're going to ask me about this, actually.
Well, it's another subject that you don't often like to be spoken about in the press.
Oh, this is a good opportunity for me to claim the narrative and give my side of the story. Last time we did the alcohol one, I think there were some requests that came in, you know, from other areas of media and press and so on, asking me to remark upon the things that we touched
on. Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't
I didn't
say.
Tell you about that, actually. And I think the standard response, which will be the same as the one to this, is everything I wanted to say about it was said in that episode.
Yeah.
And any sort of gaps in that will be covered
today.
By my memoir.
Oh, yeah, today.
Which, you know, news on that later on, I suppose. To prepare us for this, we're drinking CBD drinks, which is the nearest thing to drugs that
I've
allowed.
It has magnesium in it, vitamin D3.
Which keeps you still soft, which is handy.
Valerian root and cherry.
All of which are perfectly legal, I think, right?
Yep.
So that's good, isn't it? So what do you want to ask about drugs?
What was your stance on them when you were younger?
Should I do the theme tune quickly?
Oh, yeah.
Justin Hawkins Rides Again. Bobby?
Again.
Exquisite. I'm not sure if that picked up, but it was great.
There was an again in the distance.
Bobby is the singer from Bad Nerves. And he's also the newest member of Team JHRA. So welcome, Bobby. Yeah, off camera mostly. We'll try and get him in at some point. But
just sit right here.
Come on, Bobby, come and sit with us.
So what did you want to ask me about
drugs? A second ago I said, what was your stance on them when you were younger? Because I think once you told me you were very against them, but you could have been lying me.
I wasn't. We're going to try and keep it in the context of music, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But must have been 14, 15 or something, there was a slight inclination towards trying stuff, you know, experimenting, I suppose. And I had some fairly disappointing experiences with the Mary Jane's laughing tobacco and cannabis resin and things like that, which would always end disappointingly. I'd always be completely paranoid. I'd probably be nauseous in places. And then as I got a little bit older, like in my later teens, some really quite upsetting things happened with drugs. Like one of my friends died, and there's some stuff that really put me off it. So when I was about 18 or something, I went super anti-drugs.
Yeah.
And stayed anti-drugs right up until I wasn't anymore. And then the rest, I suppose, is...
So there was a flip?
There was a flip. There was a flip. And it's a weird one because I didn't see the flip coming. I just sort of flipped instinctively.
What age were you?
I think I was... So I was born in 75, so I started experimenting again around about 97, I think. And it was like...
So what age were you then?
I was 22 or 23.
Okay.
And it started with just a bit of smoking grass and stuff. I did have a bit of Class A experience around about that time at a festival, but it wasn't anything.
So was that serious. Was it around music?
It was actually, yeah. I think I was literally just trying to fit in with some of the people that I was hanging out with. I don't know if it was even that, to be honest. I didn't feel pressured. I just sort of thought, you know, if I do this, then I'll be accepted.
I guess that is what peer pressure is, though. Peer pressure is not always people going, do it, do it.
Oh, yeah.
It's like you want acceptance and not being...
Yeah. Like, but it's different. Not like a... I don't know.
You don't want to be different, I guess.
Whenever I think about peer pressure, I always think this is literally one of your peers pressuring you to do something, but actually it wasn't like that, I suppose. It was offered, and I was like, well, okay, if everyone else is doing it, then I'll do it too. But I had managed to resist a lot of really quite serious kind of Class A use and abuse.
But you just didn't care about the antiness anymore.
I think when it was, when I moved to London, really, and it was a whole new, I always do this thing of resetting, like every 7 or 8, maybe 10 years, where I just kind of think, okay, that's not who I am anymore. I'm in a different place. I need to sort of reapproach the way I present myself.
People call that a pivot sometimes.
Do they? Yeah. Okay.
I heard someone talking about if you're not happy with one area of life, pivot, and then you can be this now. You don't have to just be on a straight line towards, and that's this now, that's it.
Well, I think it all coincided with, like, I signed my first publishing deal, and that was like 97. And I just thought, well, I've got to do things differently now. I have to sort of, I felt like I needed to expand my sort of, I don't know, the things that influenced me, you know, the things that inspired me to do stuff. I wanted to give it a zhuzh and like a boost, and I wanted to sort of just have a slightly different perspective about where I was sort of writing from and coming from, you know. And plus, I was making a lot of relationships with people in the advertising industry when I was doing like jingles and stuff like that. And I just sort of thought, well, I don't want to be this sort of outcast guy that never gets any work and doesn't fit in and stuff. And I just wanted to be part of it. It wasn't just music. It was like living in London, I think. It was just coming to London.
I guess people network a lot when they're in the cubicles and going off around the place. Like, you become... people bond when they're...
I think it really worked because I ended up with like some sort of quite lasting and lucrative relationships that really helped me with my...
And then were they around drug taking?
Maybe not directly, but, you know, it was just...
a more kind of accepted part of the culture. Like whenever I've sort of experimented in those ways in a small town setting where it's nothing to do with career or trying to fit in with a new scene or anything like that, it just doesn't make any difference. And all you're doing is waking up feeling like shit. And there's no need to do it for me. I don't think there's any...
When you're in smaller towns, there's no need to take drugs.
That's what I think.
Because that's the opposite, really, isn't it? Because yeah, usually seaside towns and they're rife with...
Well, yeah, because I think when you grow up in a seaside town where there's a lot of that kind of stuff happening, what you see is desperation. It comes from a completely different... I don't know what the word is. Like the reason
motivation.
Why people do those things is more of an escapism thing. It's nothing to do with I don't know. It's like there's desperation.
But they might be trying to fit in as well, also.
Yeah,
but it's not in a very glamorous way.
I know what you mean. Like some sort of sense of belonging, but really,
and it might even be more pressureful. You know, it might actually they don't trust people who aren't behaving in the same way as them.
That's why I'm reluctant to say peer pressure, because I don't feel like I ever. Suffered with that, really. It was definitely a conscious decision to do this stuff so that I would be part of something, you know, whereas before it never bothered me. I didn't mind being the outcast. I didn't mind being the only one that wasn't high, you know. I didn't mind that, really.
Yeah, I didn't drink till I was 18, which is weird for Ireland, because I had to sign a thing when I was made my confirmation that said I wouldn't drink till I was 18. Everyone broke it, and I was like, well, I signed this document, so I can't do it.
Yeah, well, there'd probably be legal ramifications.
Well, not with everyone in Ireland was drinking underage, so it wasn't like... and even my friend who I met recently, who was like, yeah, I remember you, we'd all go to the pub, like, when we were 16, 17, and all be taking drinks, and you're like, I don't drink. And then he was like, you're completely unfazed, you didn't feel any pressure to drink. It was weird, I don't know, I just didn't feel any... Probably should have stayed that way, to be honest, it might have been healthier, but... I didn't feel
weird
any.
That, so almost the thing that you were rebelling against was peer pressure itself.
I had a tendency to do that. That's why I looked like a weirdo.
There's that...
I was quite contrarian, I think. So
yeah.
If people liked doing things, I'm like, oh, you're just sheep. Have your own personality. Do something different.
Yeah, I think I made a decision to just join in with the London vibe. And that was the London vibe. It really was.
And when did you start really enjoying it? Or did you ever enjoy it?
Well, I think I immediately recognised the attraction when I started experimenting with the Class A's. I think I just went, oh, I get it now. This is what I'm going to do. And I just completely went for it. I remember there was a show, we played a show in the Bull and Gate in Kentish Town. And it's only like a pub sort of thing. Have you played there before, Bobby?
I haven't actually.
Is it still there, actually?
I
think so.
But it used to be one of those ones, like you had the Bull and Gate in Kentish Town, you had the Water Rats in King's Cross. And they were the same sort of level of tour, well, not touring, but, you know, London shows that London bands do when they're up and coming. And we'd played it a couple of times before, and I remember the first time I experimented with a Class A drug was the night before that gig, so I wasn't even, it wasn't like it was just before I went on stage or anything like that. But there was something about the experience of having done that that galvanised me. And I put in like one of the best gigs I've ever done. I was supremely confident, like completely just ruled it. And it was like, I thought, oh, fuck. Even then I was like, this isn't a good association, you know. Because it was still fresh in my mind, like that experience and... Like a heavy night on that, followed by a gig that was just blinding. And then I realised that there's something residual about the confidence that you get from that that lasts more than a day. I didn't wake up with a hangover. I just woke up ready to do my gig.
Yeah.
And I was just nothing. I was bulletproof. Anything could have happened and I'd have been ready for it. It's just so... The confidence was just like, that's the thing that lasted about that experience. And I was properly there. I was completely in it. Like 100%, I'm a rock star. This is it. Fuck you guys. It was a proper one. It's a great moment. And I don't think it was necessarily, I don't think there's anything in my system, but it was just knowing that I was entering this new phase just completely filled me with confidence.
Did the reputation of rock stars doing that have any influence?
Not until afterwards, I don't think, because I remember I read that book, The Dirt, and I was sort of thinking about... I started thinking about that a bit later, really. And then I was thinking about the pitfalls of it, how it destroys relationships and how it makes bands dysfunctional, how it derails careers. I was always thinking about, this is going to end badly.
So you knew that?
I did, yeah. I think everybody knows that. I think it's not, I don't think it's a secret. You know, and even then, like, I think now it's a slightly different, there's a collective attitude towards it that's way less tolerant of it. Whereas before, I think it was super prevalent. It was in everything. Like, this is at the, you know, Britpop had just happened. There was some really boring stuff in between Britpop and when we came up. And then when we came up, it was like, oh, here's another rock and roll band that's actually doing it properly. And that was part of it. I even noticed that, like, the closer to Showtime that I was doing that stuff and the more we partied afterwards in that way, I found that it added a certain soupçon of authenticity to what we were doing. Because it was like, okay, they pretend to be rock stars when they're on the stage, but when they come off stage, they start acting like actual rock stars, you know, living that dream, you know.
But why was it associated? Why would a rock star do that off stage?
I think it's because it's a way of prolonging the party. You know, I just think if you see a band that does a show like that has the kind of energy and influence that a Darkness show has, and then you see them come off stage and drink like a herbal tea, you go, well, that was just posturing.
I don't know.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Can't you party and not, like, take loads of drugs?
Well, I can now.
But, yeah.
It was a different kind of party. It's more like a conga. Congering. There's a different energy to it. But there's something illicit and seedy and kind of exciting about it. You know you're doing something wrong. You know you're going to get caught. You know, you try not to get spooked by the process of doing those things. Because, I mean, everybody expects it from you, expected it from you in a way back then. And I just recognised that the more I did stuff like that, the more successful we became. And it wasn't long before that correlation started to be really visible. Like, I could tell you some stories about things that happened that would be turning points in our career that are always based on my misbehavior. My misbehavior was informed by my drug intake. And those points of misbehavior
Were they well known?
They were well known because they were happening among people in the industry that were interested in working with us. Like, I would be really badly behaved in front of people who were trying to sign us to publishing deals.
Why, what were you
record
saying?
Record deals. It wasn't what I was saying.
What were you doing?
It was what I was throwing. You know, it's what I was, who I was pushing around. You know, it's like it was that kind of...
Well, maybe I'm tangenting here. You said in another episode that you're angry all the time. So do you think the cocktail of that plus your anger came out? It allowed you to express your anger?
Yeah, but I mean...
Was it anger that you were feeling?
Not always. No, sometimes I was just pumped up. You know, so it could have been anything. Whatever I was feeling, I was just feeling it more.
Were you feeling good?
Sometimes.
Were you nice?
Not always. But sometimes.
Did you feel like you were being you, or were you performing?
That's another really good question. Because I think... I've got a friend who's a... She's a writer. And when we sort of... One night we sat down and sort of looked back on all those things that happened. We'd known each other from before all that stuff and going into it. And she described it as method acting. Like it was sort of... like I'd become like the living epitome of what I was, you know, what I was aspiring to be. But it wasn't just when I was on stage. That was the whole, that's the whole thing that I think made it work. It's because after the gig, before the gig, those things, if you switch it on, then switch it off, then you get two things. You get that weird disconnect between how you feel when you're actually doing the thing that you were ostensibly born to do and what you have to do, which is live and live among other people and be part of society. But when you reject that part of it and you only do that 24 hours a day, people can feel that it's real. And I think even when there were detractors sort of saying that we were a parody band and we were doing stuff that was Spinal Tap or whatever, it didn't matter that those dissenting voices were audible around, you know, the hype of the darkness, because the people that actually watched what we were doing recognised that it was some rock stars.
So was it
being rock stars?
Industry people mostly that saw this, rather than...
No, I think, I would say, but anybody that was in the vicinity of us in a moment when we were partying, and there were a lot of those, could see the energy... and can see the realness of it. It's a weird thing, but like that realness has always been a commodity. It's something that people love now. They really love it because of social media and like a glimpse behind the curtain and all those things that are so important when it comes to sort of building your brand.
So when it got too much, the band and that persona died because it was method acting.
I don't know if the persona died, because I think I've still maintained some of the attitudinal...
Well then, yeah.
Stuff that I shifted into. But there was a long period where I was super sad. But I mean, maybe we should get to that a bit later. I mean, I don't know if we... I don't want to glorify that behaviour, because I know it's completely irresponsible. And there's an obligation for anybody in the public eye to be some kind of role model or whatever.
But sometimes you're a role model by showing people what not to be as well.
Yeah. I was definitely doing that.
Yeah. It's weird because I never saw any of that. Oh, no, I just saw one thing.
What thing?
When you were at the Media Awards and they paparazzied you after.
Oh, they wanted to beat the guy up.
I don't know. But that was the first, because Ireland didn't really have that sort of press. But when a celebrity comes to Ireland, we're like, oh, my God, a celebrity.
I do have a slight... dislike for paparazzi. Yeah. I still got that now, actually. There was a thing...
But they helped. They were documenting the method acting, so without them, the method acting mightn't have been as successful, right?
Yeah, but the method acting wasn't for anybody else's benefit. It was just for my benefit.
But they were feeding into it, if you know what I mean. They photographing you doing the bad stuff was giving you, going across the papers, and everyone was seeing the authenticity that you're talking about. But even so, you had to get the good with the bad, I guess. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But that's the bit where the anger comes in. because it's sort of like it was such an intrinsic part of my existence every day. I mean, every day, that it's kind of like, you don't want a camera in your face, even if you're like a guy that doesn't do that stuff and does gardening or whatever, you know, you don't want a camera in your face. That's the privacy thing remains an issue, whatever your job is. You know, it's an important part of being a human being, is having like the space to and the dignity or whatever to just do whatever you want. And if that happens to be a load of fucking drugs, you still don't want a camera in your face.
No.
You know, and I think you know that it was never about being famous. I never wanted that.
But do you not think the more you perform like that, the more fame you would acquire?
That's what happened.
What were you trying to achieve?
It wasn't just fame. It was actually like stuff like notoriety, really.
Is that what you wanted?
No, but it was just it was a welcome byproduct of it.
So when you were doing it, you didn't want notoriety, but you wanted people to know that that's what you were doing.
No. I'm just saying I was doing it because it was a habit. It became a habit, which was caused... The reason why it became a habit was because in the initial stages of doing it, it gave me a new level of confidence. And then after... You know, once you get accustomed to that, it's not a new level of confidence anymore. It's just your level of confidence. Mm. Then anything else that scrutinizes that is an imposition, and it's unwelcome. You don't want it. It makes you angry. But if you're in that frame of mind where you say whatever you feel like, whenever you feel like it, you express whatever your emotion it is you've got, you celebrate all of your successes and triumphs, and you celebrate all of your failures as well, and you celebrate all the time. Mm. There's a time and a place for a camera in your face. It's during a photo shoot. It's not when you're walking down the road.
Oh yeah, I'm not defending paparazzi.
I know you're not.
I don't like the movie.
I'm just letting you know where the anger comes from, because it's sort of it's like yeah, this is my life. Fuck off. This
but
is how I
when
do
you're
it.
Doing any of this stuff, was there one part of you who is really nice that felt like it was being boxed off and being like, no, you're not allowed in here? Because no one's ever just one or the other.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole thing about... I think that's the thing about being a musical artiste in general, though, because even if you encounter somebody that absolutely loves the things that you're doing, they're never going to love the things that you're doing for the same reasons that you love the things that you're doing. And if you're right on the edge all the time... Even that can piss you off. So then it gets to the point where, like, I'm doing my thing. This is my thing. You like it? That's cool. Why do you like it? You're wrong. Get out of my fucking face.
No, but I mean, as if you made that your personality, or you heightened that part of your personality. People are multifaceted, right? So that was there ever a part of you that was like, why am I doing this? Sometimes I want to just have a nice sit down. Or did you know? Were you shutting off a part of you to make that part of you the 100%?
Yeah, okay. But if it's like exaggerating every part of you, then, or, you know, one of the things that me and my brother have got, especially, are like, is a work ethic, like a really strong work ethic that comes from our dad.
Yeah.
You know, and the way he has worked all his life every day and just never, always puts his body through the rigors of manual labour. And elects to do that and almost doesn't know what to do with his life if he's not doing that. And we had that in our genetic makeup. So we weren't saying no to anything. We were doing stuff. But then in the end, you end up doing stuff begrudgingly because you're tired because of the partying. That's actually the thing that makes you exhausted, you know. So then the anger pops in there as well. And before you know it, between that and the anger of not being allowed any sort of space or whatever, then you're always angry. And then some of the sort of pharmaceutical choices that I was making would play into that too. So you end up constantly angry. And there's nothing nice about that existence. It's really stressful.
Yeah.
So then you have a lovely little drink just to take the edge of that. And then you go, oh, I'm getting a bit drunk here. I think I'm going to use one of these Class A narcotics to try and pull me out of that.
Yeah.
Something that makes me a bit more up, you know. just to keep drinking, to numb that stuff. These anecdotes are about me. As far as I'm aware, nobody else broke any laws or conducted themselves in any way other than...
legally.
Nicely.
Well, how were the shows then? Because as it progressed...
That's weird. Because, I mean, when it that sort of behaviour first started, there was about three years when I don't think we ever did a bad show. Like, every time we went out, I came off stage feeling really proud of what we'd done. We had so much energy and attitude, and we didn't care. And it was great. It was sloppy in the right way. It was fucked up in the right way. We were doing outrageous stuff, and it was like... I didn't feel like there was anybody else that was doing that at the time. It was, none of it was choreographed. It was always chaos, and it was just so much fun. And I felt really proud of everything. And then after, like... after a while, there were shows that were disappointing. And I really wasn't used to that.
And why were they disappointing?
Don't know, just like if... it's almost like if a show goes right, it's disappointing. So it's like we sort of...
Plateaued?
Yeah, well, the chaos plateaued. So, like, the enjoyment of not knowing what's going to happen was absent because, like, we'd do a show and it'd be all right. You know, so then I'd start sabotaging the show, so they're not all right.
Yeah.
And that's obviously not a good thing, you know. That's obviously not good. I still like it when things go wrong, but it's nicer when it happens organically.
Well, how are you sabotaging them?
I'd just deliberately create a bird's nest. I'd go off on tangents. I wouldn't sing the songs that we're supposed to sing. I'd start songs that weren't the right songs. I'd say something fucking outrageous to the audience. Some stuff like that where I'm just trying to get something memorable to happen. And it wasn't always good, you know. It was always...
Is it not good because there's an air of desperation in it?
I don't know if it was desperation. It's more like... Because
people can kind of feel that as an audience. Like if I saw the singer trying to create chaos, I'd be like...
Yeah.
You'd feel a bit like...
Maybe, but I didn't have the audience perspective on those things.
Yeah, but you don't know. Yeah, but people can sometimes sense it, you know, when you see someone trying to be and you're like, are they all right? Like,
yeah. I don't mind people looking at me and going, is he all right?
No, but when you're in the flow, it's not like that. Like, if there's chaos and it's natural chaos, it's different to contrived chaos, isn't it?
I had
it?
One situation where, like, because you know I'm always talking about, like, shows have got to be a thing where you're so focused.
Yeah.
You're so, like, in the moment, and the hyper-focus is one of my skills, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if I'm doing that and then something creeps in that's not... not the show, then that's got to be dealt with straight away. And sometimes it's like, I haven't got any drugs for after this show, what am I going to do?
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then that would creep in and I'd be like, oh fuck, I've got to make this memorable. And then the desperation would kick in. I'd try and do something to really get the blinkers back up and make it show centric, so I wasn't worried about anything else.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
And there was one situation where like a romantic relationship that I was in was so troubling to me. I forgot the words to a song, which, I mean, it does happen. You know, sometimes it just happens and it's embarrassing and you try and get around it. Or you just repeat a verse, or sometimes you repeat a verse and then you realise, oh, fuck, I've just repeated a verse. I didn't realise, you know. But that's still flow state and that's okay. But when you know why you're forgetting the thing because you're distracted by something that's not happening on the stage, I ended that relationship straight after I came off stage. It was the first thing I did. And so I think the problem that I had was that even when I was bad, I was so focused. Do you know what I mean? Like it was. That's why it got to the point where I was probably health wise, I wasn't doing myself. I was in a dangerous place probably, but I was just sort of.
Could you feel?
Because
it?
I'm so focused, it didn't really affect my actual gig.
Yeah.
I don't think it ever got to the point where it was like that. Really.
So you don't think any of the shows suffered because of it? Like if you take some of the shows coming up close to the darkness hiatus and the shows now.
No, I'd say, no, getting towards the end of that stuff, I was probably, my heart wasn't in it. And I'd already kind of like, for some of the reasons that we were talking about, there was other stuff, it wasn't just about that. You know, I think you've got to think about drugs as a backdrop to all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of like, it's not the determining factor for every event that happens, but it is always present. And it heightens or dulls certain other aspects that make the narrative what it was. But it's, when you're in a dangerous place, it's like, I don't know, it's just... Nothing.
Do you think
nothing
you could,
feels
you
right?
Could, do you think that you thought all the shows were going well, but maybe they weren't?
No, I know when a show's gone well. Yeah, this is my life.
I know, but like
it's the only thing that actually matters. You know, in that period of my life, it was the only thing that mattered. I wasn't a father.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I wasn't. I didn't have anything to worry about except for kicking ass.
Did you ever worry that you'd die on stage?
I used to have this. I used to have this weird recurring fever dream thing on the odd occasion when I did get some sleep, which is probably once every 3 days or something. It would be like I had this vision that I'd be singing and then blood would come out of my mouth, and then I'd just keel over and die.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was probably a little bit concerned.
Were you actually worried though at any point?
I mean, I was worried.
Were you ever
just concerned sort of,
like it's tearing the arteries in my heart apart, literally?
No, I thought like I just in the odd moment of sort of how can I put it? Lucidity or clarity or something. I'd be like. Something really bad is going to have to happen to stop this. Because I think even then I'd had a period of proper sobriety as well. Like in that period when one of my friends died and then I had like...
You wanted to get fit.
Yeah, but that happened a bit later. So I was still drinking at that point, but there was no experimenting happening elsewhere. And then I got fit and sober. And then, I don't know why... Something happened and all hell broke
loose. You said it was
because
when you go on stage, it makes you feel good. Or made you feel
confident. No, but I was...
So was the sobriety after that?
No, there was sobriety before. Yeah. And then it stopped. And then that's when I experienced that Bull and Gate thing and all the other stuff that happened. And then I watched my behaviour get worse as our career ascended. This negative correlation between... how nice I was and how successful I was. And then being somewhat maths driven in my life anyway, that's the kind of equation that you don't want to see.
Well, correlation doesn't always equal causation. That's the phrase.
No, I know that.
So
I know that.
Who knows?
But I don't think it was a coincidence.
But so you're happy to destroy the rest of your life for the music, basically?
What is life without music? What is life without music?
Yeah, but at some point you had to pivot.
Yeah. And I spent 6 years being unbelievably sad and unbelievably bored.
Why? Because you couldn't get your confidence back?
No, I had confidence.
Because music still...
That didn't go away.
Music
I mean,
still existed.
I had confidence before it, but it was just like a different kind of confidence, you know.
Because you're saying life is without music. Music was still there. You just weren't interacting with it without substances.
No, but it's more like... because... And I talked about this with the alcoholism thing. Like when you put your recovery first and then it's the only thing that... that has to be front and center, and I think the reason why I've been able to sort of maintain abstinence and sobriety isn't because of like any program that I've been in. It's actually a reapplication of the laser focus. Is that?
I said you were stubborn, basically.
Yeah, it's a condition of some sort, isn't it? What's it called?
ADHD.
ADHD, but isn't that?
Well, you also have
what does that stand for?
Your attention deficit hyperactive disorder.
But is the attention deficit the attention to everything that isn't the one thing that I'm focused on?
Yes, sometimes that can be hard.
Because that's what I've got is tunnel vision.
Hyperfixation is one of the traits.
Okay, so hyperfixation, that's my vibe.
But you also have OCD, which probably has that too, right?
I don't like using OCD as a colloquialism, darling. You know this. And the reason why I don't like is because there are people who can't even leave the fucking house, you know.
Yeah, but, you have suffered from it, have you?
I have had moments where I can't leave the house. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. I talk about it casually because I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, there is something wrong with it.
But well, I don't think it's stigmatized in the same way. But I just.
Well, I wasn't saying.
But I'm always careful about that. I don't like it when people say I'm a bit OCD. I just don't think that's.
I wasn't saying you're a bit.
Right. Right. I am. I've had moments where I can't. Even when I was a teenager, like first started driving, I would lock the car. And then go to the house, and then I'd go back to the car, make sure it's locked, go back to the house, go back to the car, go back to the house. I don't even know how many times I've done that. It's just, you know, so sometimes things like that would happen, where I'd get in a weird loop, and I'd always think, oh, I've left something on, go back to the house, I've left something on, go back to the house. If I tried to leave, it was difficult. But then I think, in my instance, I think, like, the nihilistic kind of abandonment of anything that resembles self-care really helped that. It was actually, maybe that's one of the things that I was medicating.
Yeah, could have
been. Do you
think? Because I think you, well, I don't want to say feel stuff about you, but you don't you do get that anxiety about leaving your house now, still. Right?
But in a good way, right?
Like, I can feel it. I've felt it before where you're like, okay, we're leaving the house. Or if I was leaving, like, you're like, make sure it's locked. Make sure, like, I can see the remnants of it, but you're
But if I'm leaving the house and somebody else is with me, then I'll make it their responsibility to make sure everything's locked so I don't have to think about it. And even then I'll go, did you lock that? Did you do that?
Like, I still think it's there, but maybe, I mean, I can't talk about OCD because I don't really know much about it, but I know people get trapped in loops.
Yeah, I'm always getting trapped in
loops. And people who have it, who don't have it as severe as not being able to leave the house, but get stuck in loops. I've seen people talk about where they get stuck looking in the mirror in the bathroom and they're like, I have to wash my hands. Oh, but I've just touched my hair. I have to wash my hands. And it just goes in the loop. And then an hour later, they're still trying to get out of the loop.
Yeah. And I get things like jokes. I get stuck in a joke. Like, I just say a joke and then, like, it's not even necessarily a joke that lands or even a joke with a punchline, but I just keep doing it.
Like in a row or just in different occasions? I mean, you do I don't know.
Like it's like I'll just sort of do the same joke again and again. And I know nobody's laughing. I'm not even laughing. I just do it. I think that's the same. It's a loop anyway. I know it's a loop.
You get stuck in loops.
I get stuck in loops, which is
ideal.
One
prolonged substance loop.
In a good way?
In a really good way.
Yeah. So anyway, that's me. Use the comment section below to tell me if you're the same. Yeah.
But when it comes to not wanting to talk about it, is it because there's stigma around it?
No, I don't want to talk about it because it's the same. I mean, there's still some... It's some of the anger that's still there. So I don't like talking about it in the context of an interview because I know deep down in my bones that the person asking me isn't asking me because they think that the things that I'll share will be beneficial to people who are struggling. I think it's because they want to sell some magazines. Yeah. And I'm not interested in selling somebody else's magazines. I couldn't give a fuck.
Yep.
If you want to sell, if talking about the music that we're making isn't enough, then I don't need to be in the magazine, really. I don't want to talk about that stuff.
Why do you think there's a fascination?
And when I say magazines, I mean newspapers, really. You know, I don't think that's...
What if someone, what about fans and stuff? Because they do see you as like a role
that's
model.
A totally different thing.
Do you like those questions if someone asks you?
But people don't ask those questions.
Do they not?
Normal people don't ask those questions, because especially if they're suffering with something like that themselves, it's more like, I think it's more like, well, the nature of the questioning is totally different. Like, if there's a tabloid interest in something that I've done that's like that, it's always going to be looking for a salacious tidbit about how much money I spent on something, on a particular drug, or it's going to be...
How much...
Did you do anything outrageous while you're on them drugs? When do you take them drugs? What do you do? You know, and then, but they always try and frame it with, yeah, I think it would really help people. Fuck off. That is not why you're asking that question. So don't bullshit me. It's yep. just like, ask me something else or fuck the fuck off. And if you would like any further information about my drug use, then you can buy my forthcoming memoir, This Justin, or whatever I decide to call it. What am I going to call it? I don't know what I'm going to call it.
What was it? Rock Mountain or something?
Rock Bottom? I don't think it's Rock Mountain.
No, you said you're going to have a rock on the front and you're going to be on the top of it, right? At one point.
Oh, dressed as the Scarlet Pimpernel.
I can't remember what.
Petting you... a white stallion, something like that.
Yeah, you should be on a horse.
I'm not sure what it's going to be called, but anyway, beyond this episode, that's probably the last time I'll talk about these things ever again.
So yep.
Make the most of it. Ask me what you want.
When you realised you had to stop.
Mm. On several occasions.
How did you feel about the actual life with it? Like,
yeah.
Did you think the music's gone?
No, I just knew that the everything that could be a trigger for me to sort of start misbehaving again had to go. And that meant the whole darkness experience, all of my friends. It was so lonely. That was part, I mean... And then sort of like to just go into a solitary realignment of all of my values and my habits and the way I live. That was the biggest challenge, I think. Kind of, not taking drugs is easy. But the really difficult part is living like that and actually enjoying life. And I can put a number on it. It's 6 years. That's how long it took. It took 6 years to enjoy.
What made you enjoy it again? When was that flip?
I don't know if there was a flip.
Was it just a gradual?
Yeah, I think it was.
Well, maybe,
like,
I don't know. I guess there was a lot of chemical stuff happening, and so your brain had to rewire itself,
yeah,
didn't it?
I don't know. I don't really know. I don't really know how that works, actually. Because I think it was...
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
You know, you get that thing when people say, like, oh, there's a, if you give up smoking or anything like that, then there's, was it 3 weeks is dangerous, 3 months is dangerous, 3 years is dangerous, yeah. 30 years is dangerous. It always seems to be.
You're
like,
3 months is, you'd always get 3 weeks down.
What?
When you're giving up cigarettes.
Yeah,
you always do 3 weeks.
It's weird how cigarettes is the one thing I can't quit. It's just so.
Because you don't see it as doing anything damaging, right, to your life. Because you're still sober.
Well, it's a habit that doesn't make me abhorrent.
Yeah, but it is damaging you.
Yeah.
Quite badly.
So. Yeah, but I don't know. For some reason, I always feel like I'm going to survive that. I don't know why.
Everyone does.
Yeah.
Until they don't.
Until they don't. Hmm.
You have to try and imagine scenarios that will be, make life uncomfortable. Quit probably, right?
I wonder how long I'll be sad for after I stop smoking. Zero time.
No, you'll be fine.
Actually, I won't be sad.
When you've given up, you've been fine.
Yeah.
You're fine until, and you can be around people smoking and everything.
Yeah.
It was a Wembley show.
Yeah, it was. It was the Taylor Hawkins stuff when I started smoking again. It was.
But you are happier when you don't. Whenever you stop, you're much happier.
Yeah.
You can see it in you.
Yeah.
It's weird. I think.
But I don't know if I necessarily enjoy being happy a lot of time. Who does?
You seem to quite like it.
I do like it. Actually, yeah. I've always,
especially when you're running, you're like, as many times we've gone on runs, you're like, you've given up. It's like, why would I ever smoke again? I hate smoking. I feel so great. Then you go back to smoking. It's like, ignore that.
Why would I go running? I hate running.
Ignore what I said before. Yeah. Maybe you just haven't decided. You haven't fully decided yet. Even when you decide you won't smoke again, you won't. You have to decide.
I nearly did it the other day, actually. And then I changed my mind.
See, you haven't decided.
I'm close. I am close. I've been smoking for about a year and a bit now. It's time to stop. So, use the comment section below if you have any advice for how to.
You need to think about how it's going to affect that person in your life.
Yeah.
The little person.
The small person.
Because they will ultimately have to deal with it. Sorry.
Jesus Christ, that's heavy.
Yep. Just bring in the lightness.
Bobby, bring me another beer.
Well, a lot of people struggle with this too in your audience.
Mm.
They just can't see. Even the alcohol one, they're like, people are like, I know it's ruining my life. I'm having drinking right now, but I can't stop. You don't really have any advice for people like that, do you? If they were taking drugs. Or they're around people who are taking drugs. Or they're in a band.
I do.
Do you?
But it's not welcome advice.
That's.
I know. I think I know what the correct advice would be in
what
that situation.
It?
Well, the whole thing about abstinence is you need to get through every single day knowing that you won't use or pick up or drink or whatever. So if there's trigger points that make you so anxious that you want to revert to your the habits that are making you do self-destructive stuff, you need to take yourself out of all those situations. So if you're in a band or you're in the music trade and you're surrounded by people who are doing drugs and drinking and all that stuff, you've got to stop being around those people. You've got to stop doing that gig. You've got to find. I was lucky because I was able to sort of create musical endeavors and structures where everybody knew that they couldn't drink around me and they couldn't do drugs around me.
How long did that period last?
About 5 years.
So you were even in the darkness.
No, the darkness
started
up again after 5 years, but the conditions were, you know, you got to be careful around me because otherwise I'm not going to be part of this, you know, and everybody was on board with that, and then I've completely softened my position now. I don't mind if people drink and stuff like that. It's all right, you know. I actually enjoy being around people that are drinking now,
but not drugs.
I wouldn't know. Nobody I know does any drugs.
Well, remember that situation we were in. In a bar.
There was an after show and there was a mix-up between the proprietor of the bar who was holding on to our backpacks for us. And then when we asked to get them back, he misunderstood that situation and thought that we were asking for some cocaine. But so when we went to get the bags, there were some lovely lines of delicious, soothing cocaine waiting for us and we had to refuse them. But those situations aren't difficult for me. It's like I don't do drugs, so that's not an issue. But back in the days, that would have been something that would be like, oh, fuck. But I wouldn't have even been at the after show. I wouldn't put myself in a situation where there's hundreds of people standing around drinking. Why would I go to a thing like that? I was super sad and I was like, fuck, and just isolating. And that's why I didn't want to be part of the darkness thing anyway. You know, I was able to do other music things where I wasn't ever exposed to that sort of thing. But I had the luxury of being able to remove myself from that without having to remove myself from music altogether. You know, so I suppose that's what the challenge is, because like if you put your recovery, and I don't always like that expression.
Why?
And I know I should. The responsible thing to do is say that you're in recovery, but I don't know if I like that. I don't like the implications of that.
Why? Because you feel like you're tying yourself to that type of people.
No, because I don't necessarily think that partying and enjoying stuff like that is an ailment of sorts, you know.
Well, I guess
it's very specific. I don't even know where it is, but there is a moment when it becomes too much and it's an issue. And then the habitual behaviours that have led to that make it a problem. But before that, it's not. So what are you recovering from? You're recovering from overstepping that boundary. And I don't necessarily think it's the right word.
Well,
I just don't.
It's associated with addiction.
Yeah.
Which is...
But it's associated... It's part of a lexicon of addiction that's really... It's prevalent because of the main and most sort of... the most popular way of getting your life back together or, you know, retaking control of your life after a situation like that. I mean, I just think recovery just sounds like you've had an operation or something like that. I don't think it's the right word. We've got to find another way of putting that, I think.
I guess it's recovery.
When you say, like, he's in recovery, I always imagine somebody wearing, like, a velour tracksuit after they've had, like, a big surgical procedure of some sort.
I guess it's two different things because some people don't drink because they just don't drink. I know loads of people who don't drink. It was not because they had... a problem with drinking or have addictive personalities or anything. They just don't drink. Then there's people who don't drink because if they have that type of personality trait that if they do drink, it's potentially dangerous to them.
Mm.
And that's where I think it's different. And maybe there is, I don't know if you associate yourself as someone who has an addiction problem or not.
I've got a lot of problems.
I wasn't asking about it.
I've got 99 problems, but addiction ain't one. Oh, actually, maybe it is. Okay, 100.
And that's maybe where the recovery is, because you're trying to recover from being addicted. But maybe, I don't know.
Or maybe you're recovering from the decisions and stuff that you did whilst in that behaviour pattern.
Yeah. But if you didn't
Do you think realistically there's an opportunity for me to recover from OCD, for example?
No, but that... Oh, maybe. Or maybe it's just managing addiction and managing OCD.
So but it's not recovering, really, is it?
Well, they say they're never recovered. That's the whole thing, isn't it?
Yeah, so why do people say they're in recovery?
I don't know.
I don't think it's the right word.
What would you suggest?
Okay, if I had to suggest a new term for it, I would say... I almost think it's like it's almost like a rebirth. As spiritual and stupid as that sounds, and I fucking hate myself for being that much of a hippie. I really do. But it's,
well, actually, the recovery thing, I think, is recovering the person you were intended to be. That's one of the phrases.
What?
Recovering the person that you were that you are intended to be, the real version of you that isn't addicted and stuff. Like, you, this thing happened to you, and then you're rebirthing yourself and recovering that person.
Yeah, but.
Or are you saying
no? But the things, but I think one of the things that contributed to my issues would have been the laser focus. That's not an easy thing to manage. And if I laser focus and get into the habits that enable me to really zoom in on the things that I'm trying to achieve, the objectives that I've got, you know, at the back of my mind, I don't necessarily tell people what they are, but I'm always pushing for something.
Mm.
And then, I don't know what I was going to say about that, actually. What was I going to say about
that? You said it was a rebirth, and I said some people say you're recovering. Mm. The
yeah,
person.
So, but the person... So you could argue that that focus thing is a symptom of the thing that I'm trying... that I should probably try and get rid of. And the person that I was... Do you mean the person that I intended to be or the person that I was intended to be?
Was intended to be, I think.
So was intended to be implies that there's some other force or entity that says to you what sort of person you're supposed to be.
No, I think there's you, like the essence. Some people believe in essence, don't they? Like
right,
human essence.
So this is getting more hippie stuff.
And that all those... extra things like addiction and environmental things and patterns and behavioral, like you get layered in them, and then affect and they squash the version of you that's underneath you.
But the good thing about that thing is that you can be completely covered in those things and you still see through it at the goal.
What's the goal?
Whatever it happens to be.
What do you mean?
Whatever the laser focus is.
Is this your work ethic thing coming in?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Because what if you don't have a goal?
Well, you're fucked.
No.
You are.
I mean, purpose helps, but...
Because I think if you don't have that thing, then your purpose is to get fucked up. That's when it sort of shifts into being like something that you use to maintain that.
But you need...
To the goal itself, and then you're using that to get that, and then that's the loop that you really need to avoid. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like your whole... The objective is to get fucked up, and getting fucked up in a certain way helps you focus on that, and that's all you do.
Yeah.
And that's how you end up dying. And with that, I think we conclude... Oh.
But are you okay with doing nothing?
No.
See, that might be where there's an issue. Sometimes you have to be okay with nothing.
No. I'm really not okay with that.
I know.
That is the worst. That is the most dangerous. That's the most dangerous.
How can you train?
The most precarious situation I've been in the last few years is a day when I don't have to do anything.
I know, yeah.
And I can't have those.
But what if you learned to be okay with that?
Why would I want to do that?
Because you don't need to have to obtain stuff or achieve anything. You can just be sometimes. Why would you want to be? These situations occur, so when you're okay with them, it prevents those precarious situations of self-destruction creeping in order to distract yourself from the nothingness.
Yeah, but I've found a way of putting things in that I feel like I have to do.
Yeah, but
that aren't destructive.
But that's managing it,
like going running.
Yeah, but I sometimes think the ultimate goal, not to have nothingness or not nothingness, my life be nothing, is to be okay with it. To be okay with, oh, I'm just sat here. It's okay.
I just don't understand that at all.
It's not, I don't want it, but I have to be okay with it. Maybe because I spend a lot of time alone. But you know, I'm very driven and very like,
yeah.
But in those moments where I don't have a goal or I don't have anything to do, that's when
you can stick on a bit of Olivia Rodrigo.
Yeah, I love that. She makes me feel great. No, that would make me want to kill myself probably.
But maybe that informs the music tastes thing as well. Maybe that's like, because I just can't be sad.
I don't love Olivia Rodrigo. Please, I need to get this off.
If we could readopt the characters from the previous episode. No, but I mean,
you need to be okay.
Not necessarily, I'm not talking about necessarily any particular artist, but I think that's like, that's why if I'm listening to something, it's got to be something where I can figure out how it works. I think I might be like one of those meth addicts that tweaks and takes radios apart and tries to find out what's going on.
But that's where, I don't want to bring sex addiction in, but that's where sex and love addiction is, because a lot of people can't be alone for a night, like in a hotel room. Or I'm just like, there has to be something.
I can do solitude, but I just can't do nothing.
It's an amazing thing to be able to do nothing. I'm training myself to try and be able to do it. I can't do that.
I don't even think I can envisage a moment where I'm not.
I'm the same as you in some ways. My whole day I'm doing something. And then if I don't do anything, I'm like, I just should go to sleep then, because like there's nothing to do. I struggle watching I'm not going to put on a shitty movie because I'm like, I'm just going to go to bed instead and wake up, and then I can start my tasks the next day.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Why can't I relax then?
Well, we don't want to go too...
Why can't I relax?
Why can't you relax? What are you afraid of?
I think it's a waste of time.
But the time will pass anyway.
Yeah, but you don't get that much of it, so you have to do stuff.
Watching on, looking at your phone, it's a waste of time.
I know.
You do that.
You think I should look at my phone?
No. That's, why would you do that? Like, why is looking at random shit on your phone any more beneficial than sitting and enjoying a moment of just existence?
But even if you're enjoying a moment, you're looking at something or doing something.
No, if you're just sat there. I guess it depends.
I always think that thing about sleep is like... Sometimes it's like I get to the point where... You know, sometimes I write to you and I say, like, I can't work the next hour, I've got to go sleep. And then I just go into full shutdown. But it's not a relaxing sleep, it's like a absolutely necessary. You know, if I don't do this, I feel like my brain's going to explode.
I can only do it at night.
And I get competitive about just about every aspect of my life. super competitive, either with myself or.
But you don't. You try not to show it. You always tell me that. You said on the last podcast, "Oh, I'm not ambitious."
Ambition and competitiveness aren't the same thing, though.
So, what are you competitive about?
Just everything.
Like what?
Like I want to be the best at throwing banana peels into a bin from a distance. That kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, when we're playing sports together.
Yeah, I play.
You broke my ankle. I did win that game though.
It's because
I couldn't continue
full
after my ankle was broken.
That's how you
that's how I won. Score a goal and then orchestrate an injury.
Score a goal. Yeah.
Or if you can't be the best, do this.
What's that one?
Let's say you can't be the best at something. Yeah. You'd be like, I don't care about that. It's stupid. I don't care if I'm...
I definitely lose enthusiasm for things that I can't be the best
at. So yeah. Either I can't be in the middle. Yeah, they don't care. I really don't care about it. Or I have to be the best.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not like being mediocre.
I mean, that's probably quite a common...
Is it? It means I can't enjoy...
That started at school, though, because it's like... I was weirdly lazy at school... Because like the stuff that came naturally, I was like, okay, this is what I like, and the stuff that I had to work for, I was like, okay, I'll wait till the end of the term when there's an exam coming up, and I'll just, you know, revise or find out why I'm bad at it and address that just before the exams. And luckily, I'm so old that a lot of it was about exams. It wasn't like prolonged being good at something over the course of time, because if stuff was difficult, I just wasn't engaged with it, you know. If I wasn't kind of like immediately the best one in the class at understanding this thing, I just had no interest in it, and then I'd feign interest in it for a really short period of time and then smash the
exam. It's like when we're playing darts and I cried.
You cried?
Remember I was behind the mantelpiece?
What happened? You didn't cry.
Well, I was
but your lip trembled.
I was weeping, silently weeping. And you, anytime I went,
that was really funny because at one point there was the mantelpiece, and then I think I guess I won a frame or something, and then you went, and your hand just like looked for the mantelpiece. Sell yourself. It was really upsetting.
Yeah.
For me.
And then what did you do when it was my go? You got behind me and started singing "This Is Your Moment."
I was trying to encourage you. I thought it'd be like a national anthem.
Oh yeah, I think that was going to help.
This is your moment. And you were like, shut up.
I think at one point I nearly stormed off.
I didn't know you nearly stormed. I'm sorry about that.
Then you were like, don't worry, I'll just use my left hand. Oh yeah, that's going to make me feel better. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's all a bit of an issue, isn't it? You know.
So why can't you...
Why is this all about me? Let's talk about drugs in general.
All right. Hmm. Why is it in the music industry? What happens if they get rid of it completely? Oh, I don't know how they can do that because it's already illegal. But...
If they get rid of it...
Like if it like just doesn't exist?
Yeah.
Or is that happening right now?
If we were to try and widen this... You know, the drug... How drugs are intrinsic to music. We've had this conversation before about... The kind of drugs that inform different kinds of music.
And then we always stop talking about it because it feels wrong.
It is wrong. But it's also true. You know, there's music that's sort of that you associate with heroin. There's music that you associate with cocaine. Most of that's from the 80s.
So would you say The Darkness is?
Oh, I don't know. That's boozy music, really.
You think so?
Yeah, because it's boogie woogie pop rock thing.
Did you just describe your music as boogie woogie?
Boogie woogie. Yeah, it's boogie woogie music. That's what it is.
Is it?
Of course it is.
Oh.
Yeah. That's the boogie woogie is the dance that you see everybody in a darkness gig doing.
That?
I know what's going to happen now. I'm going to say a different style of dance. Foxtrot, waltz, the Charleston, and it's going to look exactly the same as what you just presented to me as boogie woogie.
Is it because you see me do it anyway? in life.
So if I said the waltz, you'd go like, oh yeah.
I need a person to waltz with.
That's a lovely lyric in a song. I need a person to waltz with. And it's gender neutral as well. Brilliant. It's really now, apart from the waltz bit.
Foxtrot.
I need a person to tango with. No, but I think, you know, we all know what heroin music sounds like. We all know what LSD music sounds like. We all know what grass music sounds like. We all know what booze music sounds like. It's so intrinsic, like drugs and alcohol are so intrinsic to music, you can almost hear in the sort of musical choices and the aesthetic of every piece of music that you ever hear, you can almost say, oh yeah, that's what I would call ketamine music, for example, you know, just an ecstasy music, or, you know what I mean? Like it's just, I don't know. It's always been there.
Do you think people can achieve those states without taking substances?
Yeah. I do. I think you can simulate it. With the exception of LSD.
Well, if you meditate hard enough.
Which is never going to happen. Should we call it a day? I think we've been...
Yeah.
Fairly candid in a lot of this stuff.
Yep.
When I say we.
Yeah.
I mean you.
I mean, I really opened up.
I mean, Bobby. Okay, cool. So I think that's more or less all we've got to say about drugs. Thank you, Jenny Mayfin, my producer.
And Justin Hawkins.
And look at that Bobby over there, the new member. Come and give us a wave, Bobby. Come on, sit down. What's your favourite drug? What do you normally
do? We're going to get him arrested after this episode.
Yeah, so, yeah, brilliant. Nice one, guys. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. It was pretty heavy, wasn't it? It actually got quite serious in places. A bit light on the laughs, but my God, what an important subject. It was cathartic. I really enjoyed it. In the meantime, Justin Hawkins rides again, live, actually not live, but direct. I'm going to lean against these railings. See you guys.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.